What's going on, guys? It is a Tuesday night. I am the Solid Monster, and this is a very special double review for NXT and AEW Dynamite for the second year in a row now. Dynamite and NXT running kind of head-to-head for an hour. There was a little bit of overlap between the two shows, but because of baseball, Dynamite got bumped up by a night, and so this was the go-home show to WrestleDream, their big pay-per-view coming up this weekend. And they went up against an NXT show from St. Louis with a special appearance by Randy Orton. St. Louis's own Randy Orton. And we're going to talk about both shows because I have watched both shows, including the 1 hour where I had two different screens going at the same time. So we're going to be talking about both of these things. This was the second episode of NXT on the CW network. Last week was their debut. And I was not overly impressed last week with that first CW show. This week was a big improvement from last week. Actually really liked the NXT show tonight. Just the whole vibe of the show. They were in a different location. They were in a much smaller venue. And I really think it made the show, just the energy and the vibe of the show was much improved. And they had some great action as well, including the main event, which was Randy Orton against Javon Evans, the 20-year-old phenom in NXT, who's been getting a bit of a push throughout the year, and he was in there in the biggest match of his life tonight. And in the biggest moment, in what could have been, up to this point, the biggest moment in his young career, because you know all week long he was thinking about it, how are we going to do this RKO spot, right? He was going to bed every night thinking about this. And unfortunately, whatever it was that they had in mind, whatever he thought, oh man, this is going to go viral, this is going to be huge, it didn't quite work out that way. And I'll tell you what, if it was 15 years earlier, Randy Orton would have reacted in a very different way than he did tonight. You could tell how Randy Orton has matured over the years, because the reaction he had to that botched finish was not going to be the reaction that he would have had many years ago. But I thought it was a very enjoyable show on the whole. Over on TBS, we had AEW Dynamite, a show that they billed as Title Tuesday. You would think a show called Title Tuesday, they also have their Battle of the Belts that they're contractually obligated to do four times a year. But you would think on a show called Title Tuesday, okay, well, there's going to be some championship matches. Well, you would be wrong if you thought that there would be championship matches being plural. We had one championship match tonight, which was for two titles, the TBS title and the New Japan Strong Women's title. And that was it. One title match on a show called Title Tuesday, which is quite absurd. So I'm not even sure why they called it that in the first place, unless they were referring to the number one contenders match, which had title implications for the women's world title at WrestleDream this weekend, but that's a bit of a stretch. So yes, we had Title Tuesday with one title match, and frankly, it wasn't even a significant title. And that's what we ended up with there. Dynamite, I could already tell from the poll results, and we're going to check out the poll results later on from Twitter, so you can go vote right now. So I could already tell the reaction is going to be mixed. I don't think I disliked this episode of Dynamite the way that some of you may have. I thought on the whole it was a solid show. It wasn't the worst Dynamite I've ever seen or anything like that. It just didn't do a whole hell of a lot to get me any more excited for WrestleDream this weekend. This was the go-home show. This was their last-ditch effort to get people pumped up for WrestleDream, which I am sure when WrestleDream comes, as is usually the case with these AEW shows, it'll be an excellent show. Yeah, you get a lot of quality matches on there, and they do pay-per-view very well. I'm not worried about that aspect of things. You know, in the ring, they can handle their business on those shows. But just going into it, as far as the stories, as far as the key matches, they didn't really do a whole hell of a lot tonight to get me excited for that show. They didn't make me less inclined to be excited, but they didn't get me any more excited for it. But we did get a couple of really good matches on the show, including one that I was not expecting to necessarily enjoy as much as I did, maybe because there was just so much wrestling going on tonight. And it was a match that you would absolutely just see thrown out there on Rampage, maybe Collision. It has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on the pay-per-view this weekend, and yet it stole the show. From an in-ring perspective, it stole the show. between Hologram and Commander. I mean, that's a Rampage match if I've ever heard one. But it was the best thing bell to bell on the entire show. And then there were some other things on the show that were head-scratching, but that's sort of par for the course lately when it comes to Dynamite. So we're going to talk about both of these shows. If I had to pick one over the other, which one I enjoyed more, which one I personally thought was the better of the two shows, it was NXT by far. But we're going to talk about both of them here because, again, this is your NXT and Dynamite dual review. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you for hanging out with me here for a little bit on a Tuesday night. Usually I'm on a different channel on a Tuesday night doing a different show. We're going to be doing that show tomorrow night. That's TNT. But tonight was a special night. Had to cover both these shows. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open as well. And thank you to all of our new channel members and everybody who has gifted memberships. I do appreciate the patronage. It is very, very cool. Why don't we begin here with NXT, since that got the jump on Dynamite. So that is what we are going to kick off with here. They were at the Factory in St. Louis. And for those of you who don't know, the Factory is a relatively small venue. They downgraded from a larger arena. They booked a larger building, probably thinking, well, WWE is the hot ticket right now. We got Randy Orton on the show. He's from St. Louis. And they could barely sell 2,000 tickets. And this was a big building. This might have been like an NBA-sized building. So they had to cancel the show from there, and they moved it to a much smaller venue, hence the Factory. And so it was much smaller, much more intimate, and not for nothing. I think it enhanced the show. And I just thought the look and feel of the show tonight was a lot better than it was last week, even though they were in a bigger building with more people. It's funny how that works sometimes. So I really enjoyed it. The only thing is, you could tell they really kept the building dark. It was pretty dark. And not because they couldn't move tickets, but I think what it was, they just didn't want people to see how small the venue was. And I'm watching this and I'm like, come on. It's not that big of a deal. You know, just lighten it up a little bit. But it reminds me, like, many, many years ago, when times were very lean for them, WWF would run these syndicated tapings, literally sometimes at high school gymnasiums. And you could see in the background, like, you'd see the windows outside. You could tell how small the venue was. Or they would run some other places up and down the East Coast that were very small. But, you know, to me, it's not that big of a deal. I think it would have been fine. I wish they would have lightened it up a little bit, but you know what? Actually, this venue reminded me. I remember Lowell in 1997. They ran two episodes of Raw, one at the beginning of the year, one later in the year, at, I want to say, the Lowell Civic Center, and maybe it was a different building there, but that episode of Thursday Raw Thursday, where Shawn Michaels lost his smile. And then later in the year, it was the episode where Shawn Michaels and Triple H had their fake European title match where Triple H won the belt. That's what this building kind of reminded me of. I couldn't put my finger on it, but that's really what it made me think of when I was watching this show, just the look and feel of it. And the NXT champion, Trick Williams, was out first to open the show. Talked about how he is, of course, the new NXT champion after his win last week over Ethan Page. And he knows what that means. He has a new title around his waist because they have new belts made. And the Sharks are circling in the locker room now. All eyes are on him. He becomes public enemy number one. Wesley interrupted from up in the balcony, because you could do that sort of thing when you're in a small venue. You can stand in the balcony with a microphone, and you can look up and you can interact with the other person. He says Trick is not the only one with a career-defining moment last week. He shed some unnecessary weight, plans to become a Triple Crown champion in NXT. He says right now Trick is the face of NXT, but he's going to tell him something that nobody else has the balls to tell him. He ain't it. And he plans to take the title. So that brought out Jey Uso, because why not? Boy, this took a turn. Out comes the Intercontinental Champion, Jey Uso. And he walks out to the ring and hugs Trick, and he appreciates him coming out here after Jay's win over Xavier Woods on Raw last night, all fucking 4 minutes of it. Says he knows Jay is tired, but they look good with gold around their waist. And we got competing chance of yeet and whoop that Trick and whoop that yeet and yeet that Trick and whatever it was. They're going back and forth. The people were having fun. They posed together. And that was it. They made Jey Uso stay an extra day in St. Louis just to do this. I'd be pissed. I could be home with my kids and my family. And we never saw him again for the rest of the show. What they wanted was, they wanted Jey there so he could give Trick the rub. That's really all it was. And to that end, you know, they did what they wanted to do. But the segment itself, not much of a segment here. You know, Wesley calls his shot. He's going to give Trick Williams a great match. I mean, as a first challenger coming out of last week's title win, you know, Trick now is a two-time champion. And Wesley as a challenger to kick off the second reign here for Trick is not a bad idea. Doesn't leave any doubt as to who's going to win. All right, we know it's not going to be Wesley. But the reality is, you know, Trick needs an opponent. Wes is coming off of a big win over Zach Wentz in that street fight last week. So now he's as strong as he's probably been in a very long time as a single. So it kind of makes sense why they would want him to be next in line. So from this, they went directly into the entrances for the first match of the night, which was the women's North American champion, Kalani Jordan, and the women's tag team champions, Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill, taking on Fatal Influence, Fallon Henley, JC Jane, and Jasmine Nix. The story coming into this, basically, is that Fatal Influence is not a fan of all of these athletes that are populating NXT now, who have come from other sports. Kalani Jordan, Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, they were all great athletes before they ever set foot in wrestling, so they would qualify. So that was sort of the genesis of all this. So the heels worked over Jordan for a while. Crowd wanted Jade. They got Jade. She made a hot tag. She was a one-woman wrecking crew in here. She had a fallaway slam on Jasmine Nix, threw her halfway across the ring. Got some height on a chokeslam. Chokeslam this poor woman. JC Jane finally took her out with a neck breaker. Jordan took out JC, went up top, hit a moonsault onto the floor, onto a couple of opponents. Or at least that was the idea. She didn't connect with any of them. Not only that, but when she came down on the moonsault, she over-rotated so much, she ended up on her back. So, I mean, I'm not going to give her too much credit for that. In the ring, Bianca and Jade, they handled Nix with their combo DDT into the release German, but they gave Kalani Jordan the spotlight. They allowed her to go up, hit her split-legged moonsault for the win. And, you know, Kalani looked good here, which should be the objective, to make sure the NXT talent come out of this looking good. And she looked like she belonged, you know, in there, rubbing shoulders with Bianca and Jade. So, as with the opening segment, yet another example of them utilizing main roster talent to try to highlight and get over the NXT talent. And that would really be a theme throughout this entire show. Using stars from the main roster to mingle with, work with, or wrestle members of the NXT roster to give them some shine. That's what they did in the main event with Randy Orton. Sarah Schreiber was in the back with Julia, asked her about Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade, and Julia started to speak, but then there was a knock at the door. Somebody walked in. We could not see who it was because the cameraman apparently was frozen in time and refused to move. Maybe he was having a muscle spasm. I don't know. But he stayed straight with that camera. And Julia said, "Hello, my old friend. Tell Sarah that we've got it." And then she walked off. Intrigue. Don't want to spoil the surprise now. I'm not going to lie. You know, my first thought when she said, "Hello, my old friend," I was thinking it was going to be Io Sky or somebody. It turned out that was not the case. But that was my first thought. So then we had Roxanne Perez, still the NXT Women's Champion after last week, out to the ring next for a promo. She gloated about her win over Julia, said that an old friendship has reignited, which brought out the returning Cora Jade, who made her first appearance in probably about 9 months, 9 or 10 months. On the show last week, she had been out for most of the year with a torn ACL, among other injuries. I mean, I think her knee basically exploded. So she's been out for a while. So these two used to be friends. Now they're friendly again all of a sudden. Cora said she was sick of all this talk about all the great women's talent coming into NXT all year. When she came back, she wanted to make sure that everybody paid for forgetting about her. She said Roxanne deserves to be the NXT Women's Champion. It's the version of Roxanne that she always knew she could be. And now they're back together, and that's really bad for the deepest division, quote-unquote, in WWE. So Julia's music interrupted. She walked about halfway down the ramp. Then she stopped, and Julia looked behind her. And then we saw on the Tron, Stephanie Vaquer. She's arrived. We only got her on the Tron once before. This is her first in-person appearance here, her actual formal debut here on NXT. And Stephanie comes out. She got a big pop. The two of them hit the ring. They fought off Roxanne and Cora. Then they both reached down. They picked up the NXT Women's Championship. Stephanie had it from one end. Julia had it from the other. And they held it up as they looked at Roxanne and Cora in the aisle. And just like that, they've done a good job of shaking up the women's division here in NXT. Roxanne's been the champion for a bit. Cora, though, is back after 9 months on the shelf. Julia just got there. You still got the new car smell with her. And Stephanie is brand new. This was her first in-person appearance on the show tonight. So just those four alone, we know who is going to be working with who now for the foreseeable future. And this is to say nothing of Delta. We got another vignette for her tonight as well from Australia. She's on her way in. So, I mean, they're really rocking and rolling right now with this women's division in NXT. But as far as these four here, there's any number of combinations that they could work here. You could do the obvious tag team match. You could pair them off in separate programs, which I don't think they're going to do that. But that's one way you can go with it. Or you could just go ahead and set up for a Fatal 4-Way match at Halloween Havoc, which I believe is taking place in 2 weeks. You know, look, Stephanie hasn't even had her first match yet. You know, Stephanie will have her first match next week. They've already announced that. As far as the idea of Stephanie already being involved, you know, in a championship match, you know, it's not really all that unrealistic when you consider the fact that Julia had one match against Chelsea Green, and then all of a sudden she was challenging for the title, right? So if Stephanie goes out there and wins a match next week, it's like, okay, well, I guess she's qualified now. She could challenge for the championship, but that would be stupid, though. You know, why push her into that right now? There's no need to jump right into that. I think the way to go is to do the tag team match at Halloween Havoc, and then you can build from there. We had Oba Femi defending the NXT North American Championship against Tony D'Angelo. Tony was the underdog coming into this, as anybody would be, I would think, against Oba Femi. But that was the story they've been telling with him. He's the underdog. Tony, though, had the crowd on his side. He dumped Oba to ringside. Oba, though, chokeslammed him on the apron heading into a commercial break. And he dominated all throughout the break. Tony reversed the powerbomb with a back body drop. Stax was out there. Tony had all of his family members out there with him. So Stax was out there, slipped Tony a crowbar, just slid it into the ring. And Tony stares at this thing, and he decides he's not going to use it. He's going to go clean. He's gone soft. He doesn't want the help. He wants to do it all by himself. What a baby face. So Oba reversed a spinebuster. Both men ended up spilling out to the floor. Oba gave Stax and Luca and the other one, I don't know the other's name, but gave them a shove, all the members of Tony's family. Tony saw this. He got very angry. He speared Oba down to the ground. He even got the big guy up for an overhead belly-to-belly on the ramp, which was very impressive. In the ring, both men brawled to the top rope. Oba dumped him out to the floor, and then he cleared off the announce desk. and Oba was going to powerbomb him. Tony reversed out of a powerbomb attempt, and he delivers a spinebuster to Oba through the table. So Tony drags Oba into the ring, only able to get a two count out of it. Oba sat up like a monster, grabbed him by the throat. Tony reversed the chokeslam into a sunset flip for the shock pin to win the NXT North American Championship, ending what I believe was the longest North American title reign since that title was conceived. Since mommy and daddy got together and 9 months later out popped out the North American title. So ends the longest reign in NXT history. Tony and the family celebrated after the match. He was draped in the Italian flag. And it was a great moment, and everybody was, you know, cheering for Tony and very happy. And I thought the match itself, really good stuff. Better than their No Mercy match. I did watch No Mercy. This was better than that. But if the story sounds kind of familiar, I mean, CM Punk may not know, because CM Punk evidently has never seen any of the Rocky movies. But this was copied directly from Rocky III. Like, literally, there were segments that they aired.
I love you, Solo! You are my
Sidro.
Tribal chief!
Hey, Sidro, what's going on? Thank you, man. There were literally segments on NXT television, okay, over the last several weeks where they lifted copy, text, lines from the movie. They didn't bother to change any of it. They were literally quoting lines from Rocky III. So that is where the story comes from. They've been playing this out now for at least a month now, word for word. Didn't even try to hide it. So if you follow that story, then he had to win the championship. The payoff was always going to be him winning the championship. And yet still, I call it a shock win because a big part of me just didn't think they were actually going to do a title change here. I thought there was a chance that Tony would lose. And maybe he would get called up. Him and the other family members would get called up to Raw or SmackDown. You know, he's been down there now in NXT for a few years. I mean, he was really part of the launch of that whole 2.0 era, the rainbow era. When 2.0 first kicked off and they were doing the goofy gimmicks, he was one of those guys. And when was that? That was 3 years ago now? It was 2021 or 2022. I want to say it was 2021 when they blew everything up. So, you know, he's been down there for a while. He's been doing this gimmick. You know, he's got a handle on it. You may think it's goofy and over the top. He's very good at it. I do think that it has a ceiling. It has a shelf life. Once he hits the main roster, I think at some point he's going to have to drop it or evolve it. But I mean, as far as this character, he's been a heel. He's been a babyface. Now he just won his first singles championship. Which is great. You could see the progression in him from where he used to be to where he is now. But I thought there was a chance that maybe he would lose and then get called up soon. But him winning the title actually makes all the sense in the world when you consider what story they borrowed for this storyline. But Oba is the one who I think may get the call up soon. It's possible they may wait until the next draft and just draft him to one of the shows. You know, May, April or May, that's still a ways off. But yeah, I mean, they may hold off. I could actually see him having a spot in the Royal Rumble. I really do. I think Oba Femi, if there's going to be any NXT faces popping up in that Royal Rumble match in January, well, February, I guess. Oba Femi, I could see him being one of them for sure. Absolutely. It's like when Keith Lee popped up in the Royal Rumble a few years ago. You know, and he kind of got the monster spot. So that may be him. Because Oba Femi is the real deal. I've been saying that over the last few weeks. You really notice it lately, even last week on that NXT show. And they had the Miz TV segment with him and with Tony. But, you know, even his promos. You know, it's not like he's a big, scary-looking guy. But it's not like he's just going out there and grunting or, you know, cutting very basic bare bones promos. The man can speak. You know, the man can carry himself well. It's not like he needs a manager or a mouthpiece or anything like that. He can work. He can talk. He's got size. He's got presence. He has money written all over him when they are ready to call him up to the main roster. And he will have no shortage of great opponents to work with. I look forward to seeing him and Sheamus. I look forward to seeing him and Drew McIntyre. I look forward to seeing him and Seth Rollins and him and Bronson Reed and him and Gunther. Like, these are all matches in my head as I think of, okay, when he gets called up, these are the matches that I want to see. It's really just up to them, you know, as far as when they feel he's ready. But if he's not ready now, he's getting pretty close. And the other thing I'll say about this, you know, and it really hit me watching this match. These two guys are a product of the developmental system at the PC. Because Tony didn't work indies before he came to NXT. Oba did not work indies before he came to NXT. Tony did some collegiate wrestling, and then he ended up at the PC. Oba was a champion shot putter, and they recruited him. He was part of the whole Next in Line NIL program, and they brought him in, and they basically built him from scratch. And you see the progression that they have made in a relatively short period of time. We're not talking like 5 years here, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. In a relatively short period of time, they have made noticeable progress from where they were to where they are now. And that's a credit to the system there, because that was not always the case. I can think back to a time when I was doing these podcasts many years ago, and I would come on and say, where are the stars that they are generating out of that performance center? They're bringing in all of these, you know, names from the independent scene, which was great. It was a big part of what made the Black and Gold so much fun, when you had all these guys like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Finn Balor and Adrian Neville and so on and so forth. But I would sometimes stop and say, is Baron Corbin the only, you know, name they've really created? And now here we are, and you can't say that anymore. You know, they are turning out a lot of quality talent. These two guys are examples of that. And they're main roster ready right now, whenever they want to call them up.
I am the learning tree. Thanks, guys.
Sidro, thank you yet again. Sidro with a few different super chats here. Good to hear from you, brother. Thank you, sir. We had another championship match here on this show. We had Axiom and Nathan Frazer defending the NXT Tag Team titles against Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. Had a lot of high flying early on, but champs were in peril as the show went to a break. Axiom trying to rally when the show came back. Hot Tag got broken up. Waller and Theory, they isolated the masked man. And finally, he got the tag to Frazer. We got spots galore from Nathan Frazer. Match heated up after this. Axiom caught Waller in a rear naked choke at the same time that Frazer caught Theory in a guillotine. And he counters. Theory suplexes Frazer onto Axiom to break up that submission. And then the end came with the champions hitting their tandem finish. Spanish Fly by Axiom, followed by a Phoenix Splash from Frazer. Frazer covers and picks up the win on Austin Theory. So this was a fun match. Frazer and Axiom, they're an excellent team. They have a lot of Paul London and Brian Kendrick in them. That's what they remind me of, which is a compliment. That's what I see when I see these guys. Waller and Theory, they have nothing going on right now. They were the tag team champions for a while on SmackDown. They lost those titles a while ago. And they really haven't done anything of note since. They're still together, by the way. Okay, for all the teases of them breaking up, these fucking guys are still together. They're not doing anything. So them losing here doesn't hurt them, because how can you hurt them any more than they've already been hurt, frankly, especially Theory, over the last few years by the booking. You really can't, you know, but it's two main roster guys for your tag team champions to work against. And guess what? They just picked up a win over the former SmackDown tag team champions. So yet another example of using main roster talent to give the rub to NXT talent. They go overboard with it a lot of the time. I think sometimes they rely too heavily on main roster talent. But right now they're trying to get something going here with this show on a brand new network. So, you know, if I'm them, it makes all the sense in the world if I can borrow some names, try to really heat this show up. We just premiered broadcast TV, right? We want to do well. We want to try to bring in new eyeballs to the show. This is what you do. And it's not a bad thing, you know, to have your younger talents working with people like Randy Orton, right? And working with people like, if Jey Uso didn't wrestle tonight, but, you know, Jey Uso comes in and he's one of the most popular stars in the entire company. I just feel like you don't want to over-rely on it too much. Sexy Red was up next. And Sexy Red performed a song in the ring. I can't tell you what the song was or whether it was good or bad because I had this on mute. And then I looked up and I saw that Ethan Page walked out. And I still didn't care. So I kept it on mute. But then I saw that Javon Evans came out, so I relented because I don't have anything against Javon and he's in the main event. And so I said, okay, let's see what this is about. Page said that he doesn't give a damn that Evans is wrestling Randy Orton next. And he tried to jump Javon, but Evans saw it coming and dumped Page out to the floor. Segment ended with Sexy Red and Evans dancing in the ring. Excuse me. Sexy Red is from St. Louis. That's why she was on this particular show tonight. I mean, she's been on some of the shows before, but she's from St. Louis. So the fact that they were in St. Louis, rely on the fact that she's going to get a nice reception from the crowd, which she did. And everybody is watching Sexy Red. Well, I shouldn't say everybody, because evidently she had to cancel some of her shows this summer because of poor ticket sales. I saw that in Billboard. So maybe that's why we're seeing Sexy Red on NXT. You know, the touring is not doing so well. So she can come to NXT and she can get a reaction. We were up to the main event. Javon Evans already out there for the match with Randy Orton. The biggest match in the young career of Javon Evans. Imagine just being, not even being told, according to him, he didn't even know he was wrestling Randy Orton until it was mentioned on TV. That's what he claims. So imagine you're just going about your business. You're watching the show or you're at the show. And they're like, oh, by the way, when we're going to be in St. Louis, the hometown of Randy Orton, you're going to be wrestling Randy Orton. So I'm sure he was very excited coming into tonight. He was using his quickness to evade Orton at the beginning here. It was getting very frustrating for Randy. Evans went for a few RKOs of his own. Orton, though, dodged all of them and then mockingly patted him on the head. Evans responded with a super kick and then hit Orton with a high drop kick heading into the break. Very Randy Orton-esque, you might say, with that high drop kick. Evans went for a dive, but he got caught. Well, I mean, not really. He was supposed to get caught. Orton didn't really catch him, but he picked him up, lifted him up into the air, back suplexed him onto the announce desk. The crowd chanted one more time, and so Orton obliged by delivering three more onto the desk. Evans rallied and hit a high crossbody and then hit Orton with a thrust kick for a near fall. Orton blocked an RKO attempt. He hit Evans with a power slam for two, hit Evans with his draping DDT, and then he dropped. He started pounding the mat, so you know what's coming up next. I always thought, you know, if you look at it from the perspective of, like a real match, Randy Orton is known for the RKO. And I would think that if I were an opponent of Randy Orton and I heard him pounding on the mat, first thing I would do is I would leave the ring. So I'm not sure why you would want to alert Javon Evans that you are setting up for this RKO. But there he is, and he's getting ready for the kill. And Evans recovered. He super kicked Orton, spit went flying, hit Orton with a springboard RKO of his own. I'll tell you what, you know, the finish of the match didn't look good, but that looked good. He hit his own jumping, springing RKO flying backwards towards Orton, and he nailed it, you know, and he dropped him. Of course, he wasn't going to beat him, though, so it wasn't the finish. But then came the finish. And again, this is what everybody was waiting for, right? What are they going to come up with? right? People still talk about that Evan Bourne RKO from Raw. That was like 2010. That's a long time ago. Some people say it's the greatest RKO of all time. I happen to think WrestleMania 31, Seth Rollins, is the greatest RKO of all time. But if you think it's the Evan Bourne one, I won't disagree with you. So what were they going to come up with here? Well, what Javon Evans spent his entire week coming up with was he went up top and he hit a crazy corkscrew. And the idea was that when he came off the top, if they just timed it right, Orton would catch him in the middle of this corkscrew dive and drop him on his way down with an RKO. And it sounds like a nice idea in theory, but you've got to time that shit down to a science, okay? And unfortunately, it did not work out the way they had intended. He hit the corkscrew, Orton was late, and he had already hit the mat before Orton did, so it looked terrible. Orton got back up to his feet, didn't sweat it, picked him right back up, and then just dropped him with an RKO, and Evans did a good job, I thought, of selling it. Almost spiked himself on his head, but not quite. And then he pinned Javon Evans. You could tell when this match was over that this kid was bummed. He was embarrassed. He was bummed. And probably more than anything, he was embarrassed because he felt he let down Randy Orton. The Randy Orton of old would have pulled a Kofi Kingston here and probably called him stupid. Or maybe drop some four-letter words on him. When he helped this kid up to his feet, you know, you could read lips, and you could tell Javon Evans was apologizing to him. He's like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And then Orton just said, don't worry about it. And he said, you're the fucking man. And he raised this kid's arm. Now, I'm sure he's still going to be beating himself up over it. I felt bad for him, because again, you know that it kills him that it didn't work out, and he feels like he made Randy Orton look bad, which he really didn't. But Orton was like, man, you got nothing to worry about. It's cool, man. Shit happens. And if you watch the move, it was damn near impossible. I mean, that's a tough move to try to time it just right. It just, the chances of it working out the way they had wanted it to were probably slim to begin with. They tried it. It didn't work. And you know what? With any luck, they'll be able to run this back on the main roster in 3 or 4 years. And at that point, when they do, they can try, maybe not this exact spot, but they could try, you know, the RKO spot over again and get a second shot at it. So it's unfortunate, but it didn't ruin what otherwise I thought was a very good match. And Randy Orton out there trying to, you know, work his ass off, trying to make this kid look credible, which I thought he did. Even though there was never any doubt as to what the finish of this match was going to be. And that was the end of NXT, episode number 2. On the CW, as far as the in-ring action, the show was not over yet. They cut to Wesley and Ethan Page backstage chatting with Ava, the general manager. And she booked Ethan Page against Wesley against Javon Evans in a number one contenders match on next week's show. So I'm imagining it will be Wesley, and that Wesley will be challenging Trick Williams at Halloween Havoc for the NXT Championship. That would be my guess. But that was the end of NXT. A much better show than last week. We had the Obafemi Tony D match, which I really liked, and a big title change there as well. The tag team title match also was very good. The main event was very good. We had the first in-person appearance by Stephanie Vaquer. She showed up finally tonight. I mentioned the Delta teaser promo. She's on her way in shortly. They haven't mentioned her name, but it was more obvious this week. We got some more close-up shots of her face and everything as far as who it is. So they're stacked as far as that division is right now. And again, I really like the Factory in St. Louis as a venue for this show. I don't know if they've run wrestling there before. But if not, they should definitely run there more often. And I wouldn't mind seeing NXT make this another destination, you know, when they go back out on the road at some point next year, if they come back to this place. See, I'd rather see them running more buildings like this than running just regular buildings like they did last week. I just think it gives the show character. And you know, we're not talking about a building like this was bigger than the PC. They've got to get out of the PC more often, right? The PC is a fine location. Hopefully it's still standing. I mean, this is scary shit if you've been keeping up with this latest hurricane, Hurricane Milton. I mean, it looks like it's just going to fucking just go right through Tampa and some of these places. And I'm not quite sure where, you know, as far as the NXT Performance Center, I know it's in Winter Park, which I think is a suburb of Orlando. So it may not be impacted. I don't know if the PC is going to be, you know, damaged or impacted by this storm. The facility they have there is fine, you know, and it fits, I think, up to maybe 300 or 400 people. But a venue like this where you can get 2,000 people, 2,500 people. Yeah, I mentioned the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York a few weeks ago. That fits 2,500 people. And if you've ever seen a wrestling show in that building before, and WWE has ran there before, you know, for one night stand. And I think at least one episode of ECW on Sci-Fi. It's not a lot of people, but it's enough people that they make it very loud, and it just makes for a fun atmosphere. And I really think that added to tonight's episode. But the episode itself, no matter what building it would have been in, was, in my opinion, much better than last week's show. I enjoyed it far more. So that was NXT. Let me unpause these here. Thank you guys for the super chat love that you are dropping. But that was NXT. Now we switch to AEW Dynamite. Tonight was a Title Tuesday episode of Dynamite, a Title Tuesday episode with one title match. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. You're out at the club, the drinks are flowing, you see a cute girl at the bar, you start up a conversation. One thing leads to another. You end up back at her place and yada, yada, yada. You wake up and you realize that you forgot to wrap it up. Congrats. Now you know what it feels like to go online without ExpressVPN. You might be fine, but you don't even know this girl's name. And there's all kinds of nasty consequences that you may have to pay for going without protection. Not the least of which is a little miniature version of yourself that poops and pees and cries all day. Is that what you want? I don't think so. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, in a restaurant, a hotel, an airport, it could be anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any hacker on the same network can easily access and steal your bank login, your credit card details, and other sensitive information. Doesn't take much technical knowledge either. A 12-year-old could do it. Those same hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling your data on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure tunnel between your device and the internet. Now, what makes ExpressVPN the best VPN is how easy it is to use. Just fire up the app, you click one button to get protected, and that's it. It also works on all of your devices, including phones, laptops, tablets, and smart TVs. There's a reason why ExpressVPN is rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. Whenever I travel, like when I flew to Tampa in January, and Chicago last month, I made sure that I had my ExpressVPN app on my phone and my laptop because it gave me that peace of mind knowing that I was protected. It's important that I know my information is safe and secure, and ExpressVPN makes it so that I don't have to spend my time stressing out about it. You just set it and forget about it. I have plenty of other things to worry about without this being one of them. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster, and you can get an extra 3 months free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. Daddy Ugarte says, like the Royal Albert Hall in the UK. That's right. Royal Albert Hall was a very unique venue for a wrestling show. I don't know what the capacity was, but it probably was similar to the Hammerstein. Maybe not even, honestly. Yeah, maybe they could fit 2,000 people in there. And I always loved the look of that when they ran there back in 91. I always thought that looked great. You know, Dynamite and Tony Khan, they ought to consider doing something similar because they ran tonight. I believe this was their first time. Let me see. They were in Spokane, right? I think they were in Spokane tonight. Yeah, so NXT, for their show, I think they had right around 1,800 people. 1,800, 2,000, it was like somewhere in that range. is what they had in St. Louis. NXT, or AEW rather, was in Spokane. They're in Washington as well this weekend in Tacoma for WrestleDream. But they ran this venue. They were running a 10,000-seat arena tonight. And they had about the same number of people that NXT had. The problem is when you run a 10,000-seat building and you put 2,000 people in there, which is what they had, not even. I think they had 1,800 people in the building. You hear all the echoes. And you hear all the people, and you get that one loud fan who starts chanting shit, right? Like, you could tell when there's not a lot of people in the building because it's not meant to fit that few people. It's meant to fit a lot more than what they had. And I think that you could probably run some dynamites in buildings like what I was just talking about. And they might be better off doing that on some weeks. Not every week, but doing that on some weeks. But Dynamite kicked off at 9 p.m., so we had 1 hour of overlap here. And it opened with a pre-taped Jon Moxley promo talking about how he's got to be the one to take out Bryan Danielson at WrestleDream. Bryan will embrace his dark side. Moxley will be ready. Says he has to be. Says he has no choice. What he stands for is too powerful. What exactly does he stand for? This is what I would like to know. This is what hasn't been explained. What exactly does Jon Moxley stand for? He can only hope that one day Bryan will understand. It's got to be this way, he says. The stakes are too high. Then it was over to a pre-tape Bryan Danielson promo in the back from earlier today where he mentioned a Sports Illustrated interview that Claudio Castagnoli did where he said tonight would be Bryan's last match on Dynamite. Bryan said, no, it will not be. Tonight, he and Wheeler Yuta are going to go through Claudio and Pac, and Moxley at WrestleDream, he's got no idea what he's got coming to him. So then they come back to the arena. They had Jeff Jarrett on commentary filling in for Taz. Taz, they shot this angle where Taz was attacked, I think, in the parking lot or something by some mystery attackers. But that was a cover reason for a very real surgery that he just underwent, which was a total knee replacement. I think in the past he said that he needs both knees and I think both shoulders replaced. So this was the first knee replacement, which apparently went fine. He had a successful surgery. So we had Jeff Jarrett on commentary for tonight. Not for nothing. I thought Jarrett did a good job. And I guess we'll be hearing more of him because I can't imagine that Taz is going to be back anytime soon. So we may be hearing more from Dubba J on these shows from here on out. Darby Allin made his way to the ring, and he called out Brody King, who attacked him on Collision. If you don't watch Collision, I totally understand, but on Collision, Brody King attacked him after Darby had thrown out an open challenge for WrestleDream. So they had clips of their past battles against each other. Darby said that Brody could have just asked nicely. He didn't have to attack him, because now the two of them are in the ring together. Darby brings up working the indies with Brody, staying in crackhead motels, and how Brody didn't know how his career would end up. He had a kid on the way. He was very worried. And he remembers Brody being under a Ring of Honor contract at the time. This is before Tony Khan bought the company. And it was Darby who went to Tony to advocate for Brody King to be brought into AEW. Thanks to AEW, both of them have helped their fathers retire. Brody was able to buy his first house. But the issue is Brody King wants Darby Allin's spot, and Darby is the face of AEW. So Darby said that I'm the one who does promotional work. I'm the one who does the talk shows. Brody interrupted and said, you're right. He said, what happens when Darby climbs Mount Everest, though? Right, Darby has said he's going to go on that mountain climb next year. He says, is your dad going to have to get a job again when you don't come back and you die on that mountain? Your dad's going to have to unretire and go out and start working again? Ultimately, Darby needs somebody to save him from himself. So Darby sat in the corner and he's begging this guy. Come on, attack me. Hit your cannonball. Let's go. And Brody tells him, get up. So he slaps Brody King in the face, which is a no-no. And he got laid the fuck out. Darby apparently had a giant rock concealed in his jacket. I mean, this was not like a little fucking stone that you pick up from the ground. I don't know where he got this shit from. But he picks up the rock. Not to be confused with the rock that we saw this weekend at Bad Blood. And he blasts Brody in the face with it. And then Brody gets up and he's got blood pouring out of his mouth. And now there's security in the ring to get in between them and break them up. I like Darby drawing on their history together, but the babyface using a giant rock on the heel. I mean, look, I get that Brody attacked him on Collision. He kind of started it, but I don't know. That just felt a little ass backwards to me. Because Brody King came out here, and it's not like he was being overly aggressive. And then, I, you know, 2 seconds later, Darby is cracking him in the jaw with a giant rock. I just felt weird to me. Renee was in the back, and I thought to myself, holy shit, it's Lance Archer and Jake the Snake Roberts. It's like dusting off one of Tony's old toys when you actually get to see Jake on TV. Renee brings up Don Callis wanting to recruit Lance Archer, and now I am totally lost. I have to assume this has been playing out on Rampage, but then again, talk about the Chris Statlander shit. I mean, sometimes shit just happens. Sometimes shit just is in this company, and there's no real logical explanation for it. But evidently, Don Callis has been looking to recruit Lance Archer, and I'm not quite sure why, when you consider his win-loss record in this company. But Callis walks in saying that it's an exciting day here in AEW because he and Jake Roberts have done the first ever talent exchange in the history of the company. Look at this shit. How long have I been calling for a talent swap between the general managers and WWE? Tony Khan beat him to the punch. This is what they should do with Drew McIntyre and AJ Styles between Raw and SmackDown. So Lance Archer is now officially a member of the Don Callis family because that's worked out so well for so many other people. Hopefully it will work out a little bit better for Lance Archer. Although in fairness, you know, Hobbs got hurt. But let's not pretend like Hobbs being in the Callis family was such a big, you know, like a big boon to his career before he got hurt. Okay, bullshit. And it's, believe me, it's not going to work out any better for Archer. So Callis walks off with Archer, who gives Jake a final handshake. Jake and Archer have been together now for years. Tony Khan didn't do shit with them for the most part. You know, maybe a little bit during those pandemic era shows at Daly's Place, but what have they done with Jake and Archer in the last 2 years? Nothing. Nothing. So they wish each other good luck, and off Archer goes with Callis. And now Jake is left with Renee. And Renee asks Jake, who'd you get in return? And Jake asks her if she likes surprises, because so does he. And, wait until the reveal. Wait until the reveal later on. If you thought that this all felt random, it gets even better. So up next, we had Hologram one-on-one with Commander. These are two guys who are never on Dynamite, okay? Commander has in the past been on the show, but on a regular basis, I couldn't tell you the last time that we saw Commander on a regular basis making appearances on Dynamite. And Hologram, literally, until tonight, had never made an appearance on Dynamite. He was pretty much exclusively Collision, and they pointed out that he came into this match undefeated at 13-0. They've really been trying to build him up on that show. So this was filled with crazy spots. I'm not going to name them all, but Hologram went for a 450. Commander got the knees up. And with Hologram outside, Commander tried his rope walk dive that he does, but Hologram sprung up. He tried a midair Hurricane Rana, only for Commander to counter into a power bomb, which was a wild spot. Hologram tried a backflip into a slam, only for Commander to spike him with a Poison Rana. And there were There were a bunch of poison Rana's back and forth that followed, because why not just completely just bastardize the move? Commander tried to poison Rana. Hologram caught him into an airplane spin, into a sit-out slam, and he pinned him for the win. This felt like an old cruiserweight match that you would see on Nitro, when Nitro was at its peak still, and they would open the show with like a hot 10 or 12 minute cruiserweight match. That's what this felt like. And that's not a bad thing. You know, those cruiserweight matches, they were the sizzle on those Nitro shows, right? That was the match that really kind of got you all amped up at the beginning of the show. And so you got the great action, which was very novel for a lot of fans at the time, unless you were really tape trading and following stuff, you know, in Mexico and Japan, you weren't seeing stuff like that. Yeah, the stuff that we were getting in the ring on Nitro back then with the luchadors and the Japanese stars, as far as American television, you just did not see that. But then it would lead into the actual stars, and you would see the Macho Man and Sting and Hogan and Goldberg and all these people. So you got a little bit of everything, right? By no means am I saying that Dynamite today is like the Nitro of old, not even fucking close. In many ways, unfortunately, it's like the Nitro, I would say, of late 99, early 2000. But that's kind of what this match reminded me of as far as those old cruiserweight matches. The hilarity, though, came when the match was over. So Hologram wins now. He is undefeated, 14-0. And both he and Commander are attacked in the ring after the match by Rush Dralístico and the Beast Mortos. Don't you just love saying that name? The Beast Mortos, who evidently is no longer the Beast Mortos, which just, I mean, that's just sacrilege right there, that they would change this man's name. But Excalibur called him Black Mortos. He did that twice, and I can't imagine that that was a mistake. It's just so much funnier when you say the Beast Mortos than Black Mortos, so I may just keep calling him that anyway. But they kick these guys' asses, right? And then who should walk out on stage but Jake the Snake Roberts? And in the ring, the guys, they did the Los Ingobernables pose with their fist in the air. And at first, Mortos was a little reluctant, but, you know, eventually he did it. And on stage, Jake the fucking Snake does the fist for the, you know, Los Ingobernables pose. He fists Rush. Now, there, you know, he's on stage. Rush is in the ring. But Rush looks over at Jake and, you know, gives him the salute, and Jake gives it right back to him. So apparently we got our answer here as far as who Jake got. Now, if you're wondering, well, how would he get, like, if he's worked out a deal with Callis, how does that make any sense? Well, if you think back in your memory bank, there was a period of time where Callis was talking to Rush. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, until this angle here tonight, I had fucking forgot about that. I mean, it's not exactly like they were heavily focusing on it, certainly not on Dynamite. So the fact that Callis had those interactions with Rush once upon a time, I had forgotten all about it. Evidently, he had the power or the ability to say, hey, this is my guy, I guess, and now you can have him. I don't fucking know. Again, there's stuff on this show that it's just ridiculous. But no more ridiculous than Jake the Snake Roberts now being the manager for Rush and Dralístico and the Beast Mortos. It's like, you remember those old tumblers when guys would pick their numbers out of it for the Royal Rumble? I kind of feel like that's how Tony Khan does booking sometimes. Basically, like, be the booker. We do it at the end of most of these streams. I don't know if we'll do it tonight, but we do our be the booker segment at the end, which is totally random. And I kind of feel like Tony Khan sometimes with some of these angles, that's how he books his fucking shows. I mean, can you think of a more random... The only thing I could think of that it kind of reminds me of is that very brief period of time where Don West managed the Amazing Red in TNA. Again, so random And actually, that was a pairing that I remember enjoying, and it could have worked out, but they cut it off way too soon. And Red has always had very complimentary things to say about Don West. He credits Don West as being the reason why he ended up in the video game, and you know, he got an action figure finally, because Don West liked him and really went to bat for him. But what a weird fucking random pairing, right? That's what that kind of reminds me of. Only this is worse. Now, if you stop and think about it, in theory, having Jake the Snake Roberts, who is one of the greatest talkers and promo guys in the history of the business, okay, he may have lost a lot of speed on his fastball. He's not quite what he used to be. He's a lot older now and slower and all that. But he is one of the best talkers in the history of the business. Pairing him up with some of the Spanish speaking talent who, you know, maybe their English isn't the best. Maybe speaking and cutting promos on American television is not their strong suit. Pairing him up with somebody like that is not the most far out idea in the world. The problem is this. We're going to see, and you know, we're going to see Jake and these guys on TV once every 6 weeks. And none of this is going to matter. So everything that we saw tonight, Don Callis now has Lance Archer, and Jake Roberts is now with Roosh and with the Beast Mortos and whatever. It's not going to matter. Do you have faith in Tony Khan that these new pairings that he put together on Dynamite tonight are going to stick and we're going to see them consistently enough on TV to where they actually mean something? Fuck no. So what does this matter? Look, I'm glad Jake's got a contract. He's got a job. Tony keeps renewing his contract. It's probably a good thing for Jake. Probably helps keep him on the straight and narrow that he's got something to do and something to focus on. But it's not like he's being used in any truly meaningful way, not on camera anyway. So I'm glad he's got a job, but do we really think Tony Khan is going to make use of Jake Roberts on a regular basis? No, of course not. Are we going to see Roosh on TV on a regular basis? No. Are we going to see Lance Archer used in any meaningful way? Nope. So why should I give a shit? Why should I care? Daniel Garcia made his entrance for a promo. Daniel Garcia, there's been a lot of questions swirling around this kid now for a while. Is he going to stay? Is he going to leave? We got our answer tonight. Said that he would be, he had been sitting at home, and so he's missed this. He has missed being in front of the people. He thanked Tony Khan for giving him the time to come out here and speak and do what he needs to do. He said that when you're sitting at home thinking about what's best for yourself, it's not always easy. And it's not always popular. He said he never wanted to be a guy who just disappeared without explanation. He said that it was important to him to come out and look the fans in the building and at home in the eye and let them know what he is going to do. He said that he came to the conclusion that he would do what he wants because he's one of the best pro wrestlers in the world. And he said that he feels that because he's one of the best pro wrestlers in the world, it's only right that he stays where the best wrestle. And as we all know, where the best wrestle is obviously in AEW. So Garcia said that he wouldn't be the same person who was little bro'd by everybody in the back, nor would it be the same Daniel Garcia who cries after he loses matches. He said that this is the Garcia who starts changing everything in AEW. And it starts with gold around his waist. He said that he has a message to everybody in the back with a championship, which is half the fucking roster. No title holder, he said, in the company is safe. So it wasn't quite Bret Hart coming out to the ring on Raw in 96 when we didn't know if he was going to announce that he was staying or if he was leaving and going to WCW. And they really wanted you to think that nobody knew, you know, Vince McMahon knew. Like, he knew before Bret walked out there. But he sold it great on commentary, like he really didn't know what Bret was going to say. This wasn't quite that. But as you could tell from this segment, quite obviously, Daniel Garcia has made his choice, and he is going to stay in AEW. And in all honesty, I think that's exactly where he should be. I think that's the right move for him to make. Now, this would have been confusing to any fans that have not been following all of the contract talk on social media and on wrestling news websites, because, you know, we've seen Garcia involved with MJF. He lost to MJF at All Out, and he really hasn't done anything since. There's been no mention, to my knowledge, on commentary or in a storyline perspective about Daniel Garcia being a free agent or Daniel Garcia, his contract being up. Again, if I'm wrong, then let me know if this has been actively mentioned on TV. I don't recall it. So if you are not following the ins and outs of all this stuff, you probably are watching this going, wait, what? Is he leaving? Like, what's going on here? Like, I knew what was going on, but I just think the average person who might be tuning in probably had, or who maybe just doesn't follow all the shit online probably has no idea. But then again, that's not the audience that Tony Khan is catering to. You know, he books for the sickos, as we know, proudly. So I'm sure the majority of his audience is hip to what's been going on, but for the ones who aren't, this was probably a little weird. We had footage of Swerve Strickland training, and it's kind of cut with footage of MVP calling out Swerve's recent failures, putting it on Prince Nana, telling Nana that he's ready whenever Strickland wants to talk business. So then they cut back live in the back. We see MVP and Shelton Benjamin having just watched this on a screen. And they're just standing there looking, oh yeah, they're looking into the screen, and MVP's rubbing his hands together. That was their role on the show tonight. That's all they did with them. We were told, though, that Swerve is going to be returning at WrestleDream. They did not announce exactly what he is going to be doing or if he'll be wrestling. I imagine that is probably where they're going to shoot the segment where Bobby Lashley debuts. But all they said is that Swerve will return at WrestleDream, which, how could he not be on that show? I mean, they're in Tacoma. That's where he's from. So you had to know he would be on the show in some way. Now, we were supposed to get a match with Britt Baker one-on-one with Willow Nightingale, and the winner of this match would become the number one contender for Mariah May's AEW World Championship on Saturday at WrestleDream. Tony Khan went on TikTok, and I think he said, like, this was his first TikTok in, like, years. He was so excited. And he went on TikTok, and he made the announcement a few hours before the show that Britt Baker was very sick, and she was unable to travel. So she was not on the show tonight. So the substitute match turned out to be a four-way. He booked a four-way match with Willow Nightingale, Saraya, Jamie Hayter, and Nyla Rose. So Willow was going to be in the match anyway. Her inclusion makes sense. Nyla is a former champion. Saraya is a former champion. And we had, who was the other one? I'm forgetting some. Well, Willow was not a world champion, but she was TBS champion. So it was all former champions in the match, basically. I'm not going to give Tony Khan grief for the randomness of this, just because he was put in a tough spot. I don't know the nature of the illness and what's going on with Britt. Hopefully it's nothing serious. But if she called up and basically took a sick day, and it was only a few hours before the show, then Tony Khan had to come up with a backup plan, and so this is what he came up with. So I'm not going to bust his balls for that. There's a lot of other random shit on these shows I can bust his balls for, but this is not one of them. So Mariah May joined on commentary for this. Saraya and Harley Cameron was out there in her corner. They attacked Willow and Hayter before Hayter and Willow could even touch, before they could lock up. They got attacked. Everybody ended up at ringside. Nyla dove from the ropes onto the pile, which took us into the picture-in-picture break. Hayter suplexed Willow and Rose simultaneously. Saraya tried to hit Jamie with a chair, but Jamie took it away and worked her over with it. So Saraya ran away. Hayter followed her to the floor. All of a sudden, Penelope Ford shows up. We have not seen Penelope Ford on AEW television in 2 years. But there she was. And she hit Jamie from behind with a chair. Jamie then chased her to the back. That was the last we saw of Jamie Hayter. Penelope Ford has not wrestled a match in AEW or made an appearance in 2 years. I don't know if there was some other injury. What I do know is, and I don't recall exactly when they went public with this. I think it was last year. I think it was early last year. They being her and Kip Sabian, went public about their miscarriage. She had a miscarriage. And obviously that's a very draining, very emotional experience. So I'm not sure she's been gone this entire time just because of that. Again, there could have been some other medical reason for it. But, you know, she's been through some shit. So I'm glad she's well enough to wrestle again. But, I mean, I'd be lying if I said that this wasn't random as all hell. So I guess now she's going to be a member of this new Outcasts, I guess, with her and Saraya and Harley Cameron. I mean, that's how it looked to me. Saraya and Cameron, they had a bitch of a time sliding a table into the ring. Eventually, they set a table up in the corner. Willow battled back, put Carly down with a doctor bomb, and then Willow put Saraya through the table with a Death Valley driver, and she stacked both women and pinned them to win the four-way match and become the number one contender. After the match, Mariah met Willow on the stage. Mariah tried to slap her. She blocked it, and Mariah headbutted her and then whipped her with the AEW Women's Championship belt. Willow Nightingale and Mariah May are going to have a really good match at WrestleDream. I was thinking that Willow was going to win anyway. Yeah, we already saw Britt Baker in London lose to Mercedes for the TBS title. And it just didn't feel to me, it didn't make sense to me to just throw Britt into a world title match and just beat her there. Unless it was some kind of punishment. I figured Willow was probably the favorite to win. Maybe somebody would get involved and that would lead Britt into her next program. I don't know how her being sick, if that may have changed other things that took place here, I don't know. Willow was the one that I was expecting anyway, so I think in the end it probably didn't change anything. The same person who was supposed to win probably won. And that's one of the matches that I think should end up being very good. I mean, you're going to have a lot of very good matches on Saturday, but, you know, Statlander and Willow had that great match at All Out. I think Mariah and Willow could also have a great match this weekend. We had Switchblade Jay White, his first match since July, when he lost to Hangman Page in the Owen Hart tournament. He picked up a win here, a squash win over a jobber with the Blade Runner. After the match, he got on the mic and told Hangman that he is one of two men who knocked him off his path to the AEW World Championship, meaning Page is one of two wrongs that he now has to right. And he imagines that Page will come around, guns blazing and veins popping out of his head. And that's exactly what he wants. He wants Hangman against Switchblade one more time. And when he wins, he's going to move on to correcting wrong number two. And then move on to the gold. So to that I say, yes, thank you. This is what Jay White should have been doing before. Instead of toiling around with the Trios titles, which don't mean shit, he should be in the mix for, if not the world title, the TNT title, right? Or even the international title. But I would like to see him in singles programs. It's what I always said about Malakai Black. And we never really got an explanation as to why, you know, we never got to see Malakai doing any singles matches. And then I just sort of lost interest, you know, but that's what Jay White should be doing. So I like him calling out Hangman, and I like him trying to right the wrongs of his past and focusing on the world title, because that's exactly what he should be doing. Hook was backstage with the camera crew. He said he's tired of chasing whoever attacked his father. He wants to know who attacked his dad. Kip Sabian stumbled into him by accident, said, "No, no, it's not me," and then he walked off. Christian Cage showed up with Nick Wayne and Mother Wayne and said that, hey, you know, we're both family men. He said that, look, I lost Killswitch to a serious medical situation, which is true. I talked about that on the podcast. Luchasaurus, his fiance, found him passed out, I guess, in their home, and he got rushed to the hospital. Turned out that he had a blood oxygen of like 80, which is a terrible number. Like you could die at a number like that. And it turns out he had pneumonia in both of his lungs. So they had him on oxygen, and I don't know if he's still on oxygen, but he's on the mend, but it may be a while before we see him. So that is a shoot. Cage gives Hook his condolences on the injury to his father. He basically said, I'm sorry about like losing your dad or something. At first I was like, wait, what? Did he not make it through the surgery? But yeah, no, he walked off at that point, and I guess, you know, we're supposed to think that Christian is the one who attacked Taz. Maybe in the end it won't be, but that's how they left it. We had Mercedes Moné with Camille taking on Emi Sakura for the TBS Championship and the New Japan Strong Women's title. This was a double title match, the only title match that we had here on Title Tuesday. Ridiculous. Now, Emi had not wrestled an AEW match before tonight since April. And as far as Dynamite, not just AEW as a whole, but specifically Dynamite, we have not seen an Emi Sakura match since November. So we're talking almost a full year. So it took a little bit for the crowd to get behind this woman who nobody ever gets to fucking see. But she did a dive out onto Mercedes and Camille. And at that point, the fans started to come around and get loud. Later on, with the referee momentarily distracted, Camille tripped up Sakura and Mercedes applied her statement maker, which is her former bank statement submission for the win to retain both titles. I really hope that that becomes her permanent finish. Much better finish for her to be using than the fucking Moné maker that she uses, which looks terrible. Let her use the statement maker. It's a much, much better choice for a finish. And she could apply it to anybody, no matter how big or small they may be. After the match, Moné held Sakura for Camille to attack when Chris Statlander ran out. And she booted Camille to the outside, and Mercedes bailed and had to hold back Camille. As far as the match itself, you know, the match was okay. It was fine. I mean, again, it's just one of those things where you have a show called Title Tuesday, right? The one title match that you book for this show involves a woman who hasn't even been on fucking television since April. And I don't want to hear, oh, she's been wrestling, she's been racking up wins in Japan. I don't give a fuck. Like, I don't care. Why is she getting a TBS title match? Okay, the New Japan Strong Women's title, maybe I can understand that. Why is she challenging for the TBS title? Why? What is the purpose of this? You know how many women they have on this roster in this company that you never get to see on Dynamite? And you had to go to Emi Sakura for this match? I'm not saying Emi is a bad wrestler. I'm just saying she had no fucking business being in a championship match here on this show. I just don't understand it. She hasn't been on Dynamite since November of 2023. What are we doing here? And that's the only title match you book for this fucking show? And there are people who will explain it away and say, no, no, it's fine. It's fine. Don't hate. It's fine. No, it's not. Statlander is the other thing I wanted to bring up, because Statlander, for those of you who may have missed it, which is probably most of you, is now a babyface and no longer has Stokely Hathaway. And the only thing they did to explain it, I think there was a quick promo on Rampage, which nobody watches, okay? Rampage did its second lowest rating in the history of the fucking show on Friday. It did like 230,000 viewers. Nobody watches fucking Rampage. And that was the only explanation, and it wasn't even much of one, as to why Chris Statlander all of a sudden is a babyface and no longer has Stokely Hathaway. We saw Chris Statlander have that kick-ass match with Willow Nightingale at All Out, and she won. And the whole genesis of this feud, these two used to be best friends, and it was Statlander who turned on Willow. Willow was the most likable person in the entire company, male or female. Like, how could you hate Willow Nightingale? Even her fucking music is so happy and poppy, and she comes out, and she's all bubbly. Everybody loves Willow Nightingale when she comes out. That's the woman that Chris Statlander turned her back on and betrayed. So that's like extra shitty, right? The woman who did that all of a sudden is a babyface. and decided, you know what, I'm going to go on my own. I don't need anybody's help. So now she's a babyface all on her own. And the explanation for it is just reasons. This is the kind of shit that I'm talking about. No rhyme or reason for anything. It's just, oh, you know, we want to do this match, or we need an opponent for this person, so let's just do it. And we'll just come up with the most basic bitch explanation that we could possibly come up with. Renee was backstage with Private Party, and she also brings in Stokely Hathaway, who now needs a new client. He said that he's been watching the past few weeks, and every time that they get an opportunity, these guys, they knock it out of the park. So he offers them a helping hand. Mark Quinn, though, says, though, here we go. We got yet another person jumping on the bandwagon in the last few weeks. Where were you the last 5 years that we've been in this company? He goes, we don't need your help. We decline your offer. Stokely says, I think you're making a big mistake. I think that you're making the wrong call here. And he walked off, and Mark Quinn said they don't need anybody in their corner. They want this. They need this. They're going to take those tag team titles away from the Young Bucks, and then it's going to be a party that everybody is invited to. Tony Schiavone was in the ring. He welcomed the international champion Will Ospreay down to the ring, and he brings up what happened last week when Ospreay had his match with Ricochet for the international title. And then Konosuke Takeshita ran in, and he fucked the entire thing up. So Schiavone said that this has Don Callis' fingerprints all over it, and Ospreay agrees, and he says Takeshita does not do anything without Callis giving him the go-ahead, so he wants answers from Don himself right now. So Callis comes down to the ring. He tries for a hug. Ospreay pushes him away. Callis said last week was difficult for him emotionally, and he hates to see Ospreay unhappy. He brings up when both he and Ospreay beat Kenny Omega, or when they beat Chris Jericho. Ospreay said, look, we're here to talk about last week, not last year. And he wants to know if Callis sent Takeshita out to attack. Callis kept dodging the question. He wouldn't answer it. Ospreay raising his voice. He kept pushing it and pressing it and pressing it. And then finally, Callis gave in and he said, yes. Yes, I did. He said he made the call out of frustration because Ospreay wouldn't listen. He said he had to show him who made the decisions in the family. Callis brings up 2 weeks ago being this close to being the AEW Tag Team Champions, but Ospreay was mentally weak. Ospreay said that he brought Callis the international title, but if Callis didn't stick his nose in his business, he would have been the AEW World Champion as well. Callis said that he had the best wrestler in the world in Kenny Omega, and he threw him in the garbage for Will. So maybe he should throw the best in the trash one more time. Ospreay said Callis is everything that everybody warned him about. He is utter scum, and he says, we are done. And Callis smacked him across the face. Ospreay threw him down to the floor. Takeshita hit the ring. Kyle Fletcher showed up. He tried to talk some sense into Ospreay, but the distraction allowed Takeshita to hit a released German suplex, dumped Ospreay right on the back of his head. Callis handed Fletcher the dreaded screwdriver for him to use as a weapon, and Fletcher said, I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. He refused to use it. Takeshita tried to talk some sense into Fletcher, who stormed off, and Ospreay continued to fight with Takeshita until Callis yanked his hair back, held him long enough for Takeshita to hit a forearm shot. And Takeshita went for the belt shot when Ricochet ran down to the ring and he did a springboard forearm off the ropes, took down Takeshita, who fled with Callis, and Ricochet held up the international title before handing it to Ospreay. So that sets up the three-way match at WrestleDream on Saturday. Ospreay defends the title against Ricochet and Konosuke Takeshita. You know, I would love to see Takeshita win gold in this company, and the international title, I think, would be perfect for him. But here's another example of what we were just talking about with this just very bipolar booking in this company, where you could have something that's actually really good, and then you have something that just doesn't make any fucking sense whatsoever. What was the match that they were teasing over the last several weeks that they were seemingly building to? With Takeshita, right? It was Okada. they were teasing. I mean, clearly they were building to something between Takeshita and Okada for the Continental title. And all of a sudden, we have Takeshita involved in a program for the International title. Now, that's the match on Saturday that I'm most looking forward to. It's going to be a great match. And maybe Takeshita will win the championship. I'd love to see him win the title. What I'm hoping is that the reason that Tony has pivoted away, and I know, look, giving him the benefit of the doubt when it comes to some of this booking shit is the bad idea, but maybe what is going on here is they have made the decision that we're going to hold off until the Continental Classic. And we're going to have Takeshita in that tournament, Okada will be in the tournament, and we're going to build to a final between Okada and Takeshita, and we'll have Takeshita win the Continental Championship at the end of the tournament. And if that's the plan, I can get behind that plan. But if not, and they just decided to just drop it cold and go in a completely different direction, that's bullshit. So I certainly hope that's what's going on here, because they just dropped it, and all of a sudden he's wrestling for another title. And I'm like, wait, how did we go from this to this? He had nothing to do with this. Maybe they'll do it in the finals of the Continental Classic. If not, then this man is out of his fucking mind, because you can't tease that shit and then yank it away. Main event was Bryan Danielson, the AEW World Champion, teaming with Wheeler Yuta, taking on Claudio Castagnoli and Pac, two-thirds of the AEW Trios titles, Trios champions, rather. The other third being Wheeler Yuta, who was on the other side of the ring tonight. They played Bryan to the ring to Final Countdown with the idea that this could very well be his final match on Dynamite. If he loses at WrestleDream, then he's done. Because he's been saying on TV, I'm done, I'm retired. As soon as I lose, I'm done. So I don't know if they played the music here because this really is going to be his last match on Dynamite, or if he's going to be hanging around for a little bit longer. But you don't usually hear the Final Countdown played on a random fucking Dynamite. I really thought in this match we were going to get the Horseman beatdown angle with Wheeler Yuta turning on Bryan Danielson, and they didn't do it. I thought there was a really good chance that's what they were going to do, but we had a regular match. Claudio did not want to lay a hand on Yuta. Even after Yuta slapped him across the face, Danielson ran in with an attack. He tried for a dive. Claudio, though, caught him in midair, hit a neutralizer on the floor. And that took us into the final picture-in-picture break here of this match. Matthew says they're going to unify the Continental and International titles and make it the new Intercontinental Championship. Now, that would be hilarious. Well, I'll tell you what. If Takeshita were to win the International title and they did want to unify the two titles, and he went into the Continental Classic and won the entire thing, and they did unify the two, I'd be okay with that. They're not going to do that, but be fine with me. So Claudio tried his best to keep Yuta grounded without actually throwing strikes, and Yuta tried for a tag. Danielson was still down outside the ring, and eventually he did get the hot tag. Danielson flew off the top with a missile drop kick. He did his corner charging drop kicks. There was a corner Hurricane Rana spot off the top that Danielson went for, but it got blocked. Claudio held on, and he tried for an avalanche Ricola bomb, but Danielson countered into the Hurricane Rana. Danielson calls to kick his fucking head in, and he starts stomping down repeatedly until Pac breaks things up. He looked for a brain buster. Danielson avoided it. Danielson spotted Jon Moxley and Marina Shafir. They showed up at ringside. And that allowed Claudio to hit a pop-up uppercut to him, and then a 450 splash followed by Pac. Danielson kicked out. Now, Shafir took the referee as Pac went to the outside to go retrieve the timekeeper's hammer for the bell. Yuta, though, took the hammer away from him, and Danielson locked Pac in the lapel lock, and eventually Pac was forced to tap out. So after the match, Danielson hit a dive out onto Moxley and they brawled to the back. Claudio and Yuta, they argued on the apron as Pac kicked Yuta to the floor. Marina Shafir even was kicking this guy's ass. She was kicking the shit out of Wheeler Yuta, just beating the crap out of him. Claudio now has the hammer in his hand. And he tells Shafir and Pac, hold him up. And they hold up Wheeler Yuta, and he hits Yuta in the gut with the hammer once. He hits him in the gut twice. He hits him in the gut for a third time. Danielson and Moxley, they brawl back out into the arena. Now they brawl back down to the ring. Pac got sent flying. Claudio ate the Busaiku knee. Moxley got sent tumbling out to the floor. Danielson stands tall. He goes over to 10 to Wheeler Yuta. Helps him up to close out the show just as Final Countdown is playing, possibly for the final time here on this show. It was a good main event. I like the story of Claudio holding back as long as he possibly could from, you know, really laying into Yuta. And then finally, when the match was over, he was the one who took the hammer, and he's doling out those hammer shots to him in the gut. It's quite the turnaround from somebody who didn't even want to throw a strike at the kid earlier in the match. But I thought, you know, on the whole, it was a good main event. I cannot say that they did a whole hell of a lot to get me any more excited for this Wrestle Dream show on Saturday. They did what they had to with the top two matches, I think. Everything else is just kind of there. As far as the action, the hologram and commander stuff stole the show. Main event was good. The rest of it was just trying to build to the pay-per-view. And I think on the whole, I would say on the whole, like I said at the beginning, a solid show. I've seen worse. I've seen better. It was kind of in the middle there. They really crammed a lot of shit in here on this show, and probably more than they needed to, if we're being honest. But just a word to the wise, if you're going to have a show called Title Tuesday, then have more than one fucking title match on the show. And if the one title match that you are going to book on this show, if you want that to be one of the main attractions, then book a title match that is actually appealing. I understand that this was the go-home show. Mercedes is... Now, I don't know if they made it official for WrestleDream. Obviously, they're building to Mercedes and Statlander. I don't know that it's happening on Saturday. So you could have had her in there with somebody else, or... Again, one title match on this show is inexcusable for a show called Title Tuesday. If you're going to do that, then just call it something else the next time you do something like this, because it's just, it's misleading more than anything. But again, the title match that you give people should be a match between two AEW talents that people know and want to see and can get excited about. And I'm sure there are some people out there who were very excited to see Emi Sakura in this match. There was no fucking reason for this match to be booked on this show. Other than the fact that Tony Khan, well, we have Title Tuesday. We have to have a title match. So, you know, hey, Emmy, got a match for you. It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. Now we have two polls. We have one poll for NXT. We have one poll for AEW. We will start here with the NXT poll. What did you think of the show from St. Louis? 74% thumbs up. 14.7% thumbs in the middle, 11% thumbs down, so a solidly positive score for NXT. Let's see how that compares to Dynamite. Wow. Well, not much of a comparison here. What did you think of Dynamite Title Tuesday? 32% thumbs up, 20.7% thumbs in the middle, and a whopping 47.5% thumbs down. You mean to tell me that you weren't impressed by this Title Tuesday? Shocking, I know. It's just so weird when you consider all of the titles they actually have in this company. Just an endless supply of championships, right? You have the AEW World title, you have the TNT title, you have the International title, you have the Continental title, you have the Tag Team titles, you have the TBS title. You have the Women's World title. They had the FTW title. Thankfully, they retired that. But you got the Trios titles. You have all the Ring of Honor belts that they defend on TV. We're going to get a Ring of Honor World title match on Saturday. Right? You've got belts from other promotions that are routinely defended. All the championships that I just mentioned, and I'm probably forgetting one. And that's what they gave you on this show. Why even have all these titles? Why ask why? Why ask why? I already know I am not going to get a logical answer. All right. Well, by the way, we're hovering right around 375 likes. So looks like we're going to be a little short of our goal unless we pick up the pace here. So go ahead and hit that like button. We'll see where we are with Be the Booker here in a little bit. Let's start with Food High. Hey, Food High. Haven't heard from Food High in a while. It says, Mariah May asking Jeff Jarrett, whose world is it sent me? LOL. Mariah just kind of sends you to a lot of different places. But that's Mariah May. Food Hive is also one of our Sound Off legends. So, thank you, Food Hive. I hope you're doing well. Alejandro Santiago. Why is Jake aligned with Rampage Jobbers? Is Tony high? Yes. He's high on life. You know, you need to watch the... I know I described it earlier. I said that he was on TikTok letting people know about Britt Baker being sick and he was making the four-way match. You really owe it to yourself to go check out the TikTok yourself. He just... he makes the announcement. And, like, it's weird. Like, the pitch of his voice, just the way it changes as he's making the... Like, he's mentioning Willow Nightingale is going to be in the match. Jamie Hayter and Nyla Rose. And he's like going through all the different names in the match. Well, actually, it's funny that Food Hive would send in that super chat because Food Hive knows, right? 9 days! 9 days! Such a weird guy. I will give Tony a shout out, though. I mean, it all, you know, we're being funny here, but there's a lot of really serious stuff going on right now. I mentioned the hurricane, not only the hurricane bearing down on Florida in the next 24 hours, but Hurricane Helene, which just wreaked havoc and destruction up and down the eastern seaboard. And I know Adam Copeland was on Busted Open Radio, and he mentioned that, you know, Tony was supplying, you know, like Starlink satellites for people to be able to communicate in those areas in North Carolina who, you know, are having difficulty finding people who are still stuck and they're cut off. You know, and he's made some big donations recently. I mean, he's been pretty active on that. And yeah, I saw some stories on that today, which is very cool. So I thought that was worth mentioning. I mean, he is a weird guy on camera though. But he's been doing a lot of good stuff. So I do want to shout him out for that. Ricky Cornflakes, what's going on, Ricky? Hologram is officially Dynamite. Says sorry, NXT. Dev to Dust. How tall do you think Hulk Hogan was in his physical prime? Well, he was always billed at 6'8". I'm going to say he was probably legit, like 6'6". He probably wasn't too far off from that. He's probably about 6'6", I would say. Maybe 6'7". And would you rather build a Lego set for 10.5 hours or 3 episodes of 2018 Raw back-to-back? I'd rather build a Lego set. I mean, I've done that before. I got it as a gift 1 year, the Sonic... Yeah, like the Sonic the Hedgehog level. I got that set. And I at the time, this is before I started streaming on Monday nights, I would have Raw on, maybe like on my phone. I'd be sitting in the kitchen at the table and just going through and putting this whole Lego set together. It's a lot of work. It was very frustrating, let me tell you. There was more than one occasion where yours truly almost took the Lego set and smashed it into little Lego pieces all over the floor, but eventually, I was able to complete it, and it was actually quite fun. I felt like I had really accomplished something. So now I have it on display. So I will take Lego over 3 hour Raws from 2018 every single time. That's an easy one. Arabian Night, weakest go-home show for an AEW pay-per-view ever. It was a snoozer. Yeah, it wasn't very exciting. Base Beerus, thank you for the two. Can't wait for a Brandy Jade Cargill promo in WWE. Alfonso says, marry me, Stephanie Vaquer. I'll tell you what, you take Stephanie, I'll take Julia. We'll double date. How about that? Sidro, I was kidnapped by mimes, he says. They did unspeakable things to me. Also, never iron a four-leaf clover. You don't want to press your luck. P.S. Won some money at a casino tonight playing blackjack. Well, how much did you win? Never won playing blackjack, but I did win $80 on a video poker machine, and I immediately cashed out because I knew I would never see that money again if I kept playing. So I won. I was very excited. I said, that's it. I'm done. I took my winnings, and I left. And I was ahead of the game, and that's the way it should be. Sidro says, HR, did you tell your coworkers that you had handmade gifts for them and then gave them the finger? Me, that was a gift from my heart. Sidro says he won 420. Really? Says, what kind of bees make milk? Boobies.
You suck.
Alex, Brother Solo, if Tony and his family join the main roster, particularly SmackDown, can you see Giovanni Vinci benefiting by joining the stable? You know what? It can't get any worse than what they have him doing now, which is not a whole lot of anything. So, would he benefit? He would benefit to the extent that he could stand in the background and basically be background noise for the family. Then, yes. I mean, the bar is very, very low when it comes to Vinci. George Seckman can't stick around for the full show, but we'll catch up later. Thank you for the 15, George. Sidro says, Solo, do you blow on food when it's hot, or do you... I blow on it, but underestimate how hot it is, and... Really? Interesting. No, I don't do the blowing here, so... You're on your own with that. Ragnarok, people clown on Chase U, but I think they're a solid act and stay over with the crowd. Could you see them as a reliable mid-card act on the main roster? They are a very solid act in NXT. I don't know how that will translate to the main roster. I feel like at first it might do okay, but I think in the long term, I just feel like that gimmick is going to be death on the main roster. I just don't see it translating well. Some of these gimmicks don't translate well to the main roster. I just feel like that's probably one of them. Base Beerus, when are you going to interview Sexy Red? A solo Red crossover. If you ever get any Red on this show, it's going to be the Amazing Red. It's not going to be Sexy Red. Pisco95, what do you think of the NIL program compared to when they recruited indie wrestlers for NXT? Do you see it as an improvement or a downgrade? I have always said that there should be a little bit of both. So I don't see it as being a negative, but I think you don't want to just have NIL athletes coming in. You need to have that veteran talent, indie talent. You need to have a good mix. It's like when they blew up NXT. I was never against them using new talent and promoting people like Bron Breakker. You know? My issue was that they just blew the whole fucking thing up. Kept very few of the old guard around, and they literally just started from scratch. You know, they took what Triple H was doing, and as soon as he was out of the picture for a period of time, they basically stole it away from him, and you see what they did with it. Now, in the long run, you're going to be able to make new stars, and that's what they've done with people like Bron Breakker and other people like Grayson Waller, you know, they're not quite at main event level yet. Maybe they'll get there. But then you see people like Obafemi and Tony D and people that are coming up in the women's division like Sol Ruka and Fallon Henley and Lola Vice. I just feel like there should have been more of a mix of the two, more even mix of the two, instead of just going balls out the way they did at the very beginning. NXT would have been more tolerable. So that was my only real gripe with it. But you want to create homegrown talent. Of course. Why wouldn't you? Then you can take credit for them yourself. You can break them in and teach them the way that you want them to be taught. You don't have to worry about them coming off 20 years of independent wrestling experience. You know, you can craft them and mold them and shape them in the way that you want them to be. Their goal, there's not a doubt in my mind, their goal is to have the majority, if not the entire roster at some point in the next 5 to 10 years, of nothing but talent that they have created. Talent that have come up through the system that they made. They're not from the indies, they're not from AEW or anywhere else or TNA. They want people that they can say, we have a roster here, a main roster, that is 90% people that we create. That's their long-term goal. Uffman Entertainment, how about them Mets? One more for Grimace. That's right, one win away. One win away. I'm trying not to think about it too much because I've been through this before. Usually in September, though. But there's been a lot of heartbreak in the past, so I'm trying to be very even-keeled about it. But I was watching the game before, man, and I'm telling you, this team grinds. There's just something special about this team. I've had people that have tweeted me and sent me messages like, you know, I'm a Phillies fan, I'm a Braves fan, and, you know, the Mets are the enemy, but, like, there's just something special. There's, like, a special aura. People talk about Julia having aura. The Mets have an aura about them this season. It just feels like destiny. Alex with the $5 super chat. What are your favorite memories and moments from the 2009 Psycho Orton character? Can you see that version returning when he turns heel? No, I think that's in the past. My favorite moment is when he kicked Vince McMahon in the fucking head. There you go. Tassie with the $10. Have you been to more WWE events or Mets games in the last couple of years? WWE events. I didn't get out to a single game this season. I was so busy. I did not even get out to the ballpark this season. It's sad. Retro KOH, do you remember the South Park episode about Family Guy jokes being written by manatees? I think Tony Khan got high and found inspiration. No, I did not see that. That sounds bizarre because I have not seen it, but I think you may be right. Sean D. He says, duh, Chris is a face now because she went up the face tunnel. Ah, okay. All right, there you go. P.S. Is the face heel tunnel still a thing? I honestly have no clue. Nah, I don't think it's been a thing for a while. Every time somebody says, oh, this is the heel tunnel, he came out of the heel tunnel, then I see a baby face come out of the heel tunnel. I'm like, dude, these tunnels have not been a thing for years. People still think they are. The Juliet says, prayers to everybody in Milton's path. It's a very scary storm. Powerful one. What was the original plan for Shawn Michaels for WrestleMania 23 if Triple H did not tear his other quad and was able to face John Cena again as originally planned? I don't think it's ever been revealed. I don't know if they had necessarily even thought that far ahead. I don't think I ever heard what the original plan, or if there was even an original plan for Shawn that year at WrestleMania. Meaning, not that he wouldn't have had one, but just that they hadn't really finalized the yet. And Sidra, why does a chicken coop only have two doors? If it had four, it would be a chicken sedan. Also, what do you call a Frenchman in sandals? Philippe Fallope. Where do you come up with these? I just like have this image in my head of Sidro just sitting there and he's like tripping acid. And he's like, oh, this is great. I gotta write this. This is great. For some reason, I think Sidro sounds like Vince McMahon. That might have been the worst thing I possibly could have said to him. I apologize, Sidro.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Here we go. Let's do the deal. You earned it. So here we go. Be the booker time. At 1:30 a.m. and we begin with William Regal and Tajiri. Former Raw Tag Team Champions. That was a fun pairing there for a while, was it not? Regal and Tajiri are going to be taking on Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins of The Shield. Oh, look at those titles. Those are the classic belts right there. Those are tag team titles and what tag team titles are meant to look like. Why is this so hard? I don't understand. Why we had such shitty looking belts for so many years. Why, oh why, oh why. On the women's side, we begin with Asuka. The former NXT Women's Champion, the former Raw Women's Champion. Was she SmackDown Women's Champion? I don't think so. Maybe she was. I don't remember. We have Asuka going to go one-on-one with Sonya Deville of the Pure Fusion Garbage Collective. Well, let's go to the main event. See how we do there. Main event time. Then we'll get on out of here. Let's begin with one big SOB. Braun Strowman. Look at this. He's in the middle of the Strowman Express. What is with people shocked that that would get a buzzer? Have you not seen Sonya since she came back? This has not been Sonya at her best. I don't know what's going on. Something is off. She has not been great since she's been back on TV. So if that's the Sonya Deville that we're going with, and yes, it gets the fucking buzzer. Braun Strowman. Maybe we'll land on Bronson Reed. We can have a last monster standing match. Braun Strowman is going to be taking on Dude Love. All the Foley incarnations, I don't think that would be the one that I would go with. It was Cactus Jack, even Mankind. I don't know. You know, I could have gone either way on that main event, but of all the Foley gimmicks, Dude Love, I don't know. But then again, you know, Dude Love was involved in one of my favorite matches of the Attitude Era against Steve Austin and Over the Edge. So doesn't matter anyway. We did not get a clean sweep either way. We didn't get the sweep. We'll have to try again. We'll have to try again on Friday. That's the next time I'm going to be live here with you on the channel. That'll be for the post-Bad Blood SmackDown review. What a SmackDown it should be, because will we see The Rock? We should, I hope. And the fallout from Kevin Owens turning heel off-camera on Cody Rhodes. So there's a lot to sort out on SmackDown this Friday night. So that should be a big show. Hopefully we'll have a big stream as well. Thank you guys for the support. Reekin Son, shout out to Reekin Son. He's been a channel member for 35 months. He's got to work in the morning while a hurricane is coming. Sometimes I don't understand jobs. Brother, I don't know what you do for a living, but if you are in harm's way, then unless you are someone who is assisting with hurricane efforts, no job is worth being in the path of a Category 5 storm. So you can tell them to fuck off. If it's life or death, don't pick the job. Again, unless you are a healthcare worker or a fireman or something like that. If it's just kind of one of your regular run-of-the-mill 9-to-5 type jobs, it ain't worth it. Believe me, it ain't worth it. But please stay safe. And that goes for everybody who may be watching or watching this later. If you are in the path of the storm, I wish you the best. I don't know. You know, at this point, I don't know when it's supposed to make landfall. I think it's about 24 hours from now. And there are certain areas they told people, like, you need to leave. Like, you need to be gone. And there's one town in particular, one city, where I think the mayor, this was on the news earlier, where I think the mayor has told people that if you don't leave, and if you are still there, do us a favor and write your name and number and information in a Sharpie on your arm so we can at least identify you when we find your body. Like, that's literally what people are being told in some of these areas. So it is very scary. Please stay safe and hope for the best. Sometimes these things change course. They veer off. They weaken. It's a scary thing. But these storms seem to be getting worse and worse. I will see you guys back here on Friday night after SmackDown. Until then, take care, guys.